Every day between 5:30 and 6 o'clock, I chat to Rolene Marks for the Israel Report. That's brought to you each day, Monday to Thursday, by the Blue Agency. We always talk about politics in Israel. We talk about politics and Jewish-relevant politics around the world. But seldom do we stop to chat about Rolene Marks herself. Rolene is very, very popular on Chai FM and brings us that the relevant information from Israel every day. Today, being the first day of Chol HaMoed, we decided to do something a little bit different. In the first hour, we spoke to Luba Mayakiso, and we got a sense from him as to who he is and the journey that he has traveled in order to become a South African spokesperson for Israel and a defender of the country. We're going to do the same thing now in the next hour, but we're going to be chatting to Rolene Marks. Rolene, good afternoon to you. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm good, and you? And a Chag Pesach Sameach, everybody. I hope you're having a good Chol HaMoed, and I could not be more honored and more delighted to be chatting to you, Howard.
Absolutely, likewise. So, Rolene, you know, for most people, you the Israel correspondent, and I know that we've got listeners from around the world, including Israel, who tune in to actually daily get their source of Israel news. But you weren't born this way. You had to have traveled some kind of a journey in order to become this confident, to decide what is relevant to Israel. You spend a lot of your time when you're not on the air defending, educating, writing about Israel. And I wanted to get a sense as to how that persona of Rolene Marks developed. Give us a sense of your background.
Well, I think, Howard, I was born and I came out of the womb waving my Israeli flag and singing Hatikva and Am Yisrael Chai. I'm very, very lucky in that I've always had a very strong sense of who I am. And as a young child, I went to a school where I was one of five Jewish children and experienced terrible anti-Semitism. And I never felt marginalized or separate to anybody else. I always felt, you know, I'm proud of who I am. I'm proud to be Jewish. If it means that I stand by myself, then so be it, and that's okay. And it's something that, it's a feeling that carried with me throughout my teens as well. I joined the Zionist youth movement, and this came out at a time where the youth were very conscious of the situation in South Africa. We were very educated and aware that there was something very drastically wrong with the government of the time. And I really am today very, very proud to have had that grounding, that education that taught me to question, to stand up for what is right. You know, as we say in Hebrew, tzedek, tzedek, tirdof, justice, justice, pursue it. And I found my voice at a very young age amongst the Zionist youth who were standing up to the apartheid system at the time. And like many of us, went through the youth movements, became a madricha, and then got to those awkward years when you are too old to be involved in student politics, but too young to be leadership or anything significant in the communal organizations. Cut to 2001 and the awful, awful, awful conference against racism in Durban, which for many of us burst BDS and this kind of rhetoric on the scene. And for many of us, Howard, at the time, we had never heard such anti-Israel rhetoric.
Never. It was a turning point for many of us.
Little did we know, it was to get progressively worse over the years.
Sure.
And as all good things are born, I was sitting at the hairdresser because, of course, you know, this is where great ideas develop for women, Howard.
You know what? And sadly, I'll never have that experience, yeah?
And the incredible R.D. Hess, who worked with WeSo at the time, said to me, you know, we're putting together a group of volunteers to deal with the media under the auspices of the Zionist Fed and the Board of Deputies. Would you like to join? I mean, you didn't have to convince me twice. And I have to take a moment to pay tribute to both Ivy and to the incredible Bev Goldman, who brought me in, who nurtured and mentored me, and after a while put me out there as a spokesperson. And it didn't come overnight. I sat for years listening to the incredible wisdom from people like Victor Gordon and Don Kraus and Debbie Mankiewicz. If somebody recommended a book, I read it. If somebody said, follow this web page or subscribe to it, I subscribed. I really honed my craft. And some people will know that my background before anything is in radio. And I thought maybe I can contribute just a little bit towards what we're doing to fight imbalance in the media. And I thought, well, I'll contribute this. And slowly started to write letters and get my voice up there and phone into radio stations. And then in 2006, I had the tremendous opportunity given to me by WITSO South Africa and the president of WITSO at the time, Lee Joffe, to come to the World Zionist Congress here in Jerusalem. I didn't have a cooking clue what it was about, but I just wanted the opportunity to see Israel for myself, to see these women in action, and boy, did I see some phenomenal women who epitomized to me what Zionists and feminists and leaders could be. And that's why I get so angry at people like Linda Sarsour and those who say that we cannot be Zionists and feminists, because I am living proof that women, strong Zionist feminist women, who have taken the time to invest in the next generation of leaders who to pull up the young woman, to push them through, to inculcate us with the skills and with the knowledge. I am living proof of that, and I have to give kavod to the incredible Bears and to the women both of WITSO South Africa and WITSO Lamet. And from there, I guess the rest is history. I became a spokesperson for the community. I did my degree in political science. I became an international representative for World WITSO at the Zionist General Council. And I guess the Meshuggah that I am came out of all of that.
Absolutely. And I think that the Meshuggah trait is one that is so endearing and one that makes you very relatable. So you've got all of this knowledge, and that's the kind of serious part about it, but that's not really what wins the battle of hearts, because, you can be as knowledgeable as you like. If you're not able to communicate with people and to put your thoughts across and to be just real and who you are, then it's very, very hard to convince anybody of anything.
Well, my first thought with all of that is we have to show up. We have to show up. We owe it to ourselves, to our community, to the state of Israel, to the generations before us on whose magnificent shoulders we all stand.
Absolutely.
We have to show up. We also today blessed with incredible ability, some maybe not comfortable speaking like you and I do,
right,
but we have the same technology, the same platforms as our detractors do to get our point of view across. And size doesn't matter here, guys. Look how small Israel is and look at our contribution in the world. It doesn't matter how small we are as a nation, we have to show up. Also, I have an unshakable belief in what, in who I am as a Jew, as a Zionist, as a woman, as a Jewish woman. And when you are strong in your convictions, even the biggest bully will back off. And you know, there's an art to speaking. I know very often we tend to get very emotional and very angry. Mm. And you learn to judge. You learn to judge how much of this debate is based on fact, how much of this debate is based on personality, how much is a combination of the two. And believe me, I've learned some of my lessons the hard way by getting a, you know, proverbial putt. But you have to move forward, you have to grow, and you have to make sure that we equip the generation after us with the strength, with the ability, with that sense of self. And I see it. I see it from our students. I see the tremendous challenges they face. And I'm so proud of them. I think at the moment, you know, to me, they are the real heroes, because I think they're showing us all how to do it with knowledge and fact and with absolute dignity.
I'm chatting to Rolene Marks. She is our daily correspondent, our Israel correspondent. We speak to her every day between 5:30 and 6 o'clock. Today we are focusing on the person behind the microphone. We're going to take some ads. We're going to take some music. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation. Welcome back. I am Howard Feldman. This is your afternoon with me. It is Monday. It is the first day of Chol HaMoed Pesach. Well, at least here in South Africa, it is. Rolene, this is your second day of Chol HaMoed, is that right?
It is our second day of Chol HaMoed. You know, I don't know if our listeners are aware, but we do Pesach somewhat differently here in Israel. We only do one night of Seder, Lila Seder, and we end our Pesach a day earlier because we don't have the two concluding nights. And if anybody has been to Israel during Pesach, it is quite mind-blowing. Because you see the mix of customs of Jewish communities around the world. I was blown away at my first ever Pesach when, first of all, 3/4 of the supermarket disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
But
I love there
was question of Pesach why.
It's absolutely incredible.
Everything, including the dog and the cat food. I remember getting my cat a kosher le Pesach cat food, and she looked at me as if to say, I don't know what this is.
Yeah, but, exactly. Don't make your problems my problems, is what she was trying to say to you.
Exactly. And you know, most of us in South Africa are Ashkenazi.
Yes.
So we don't eat kitniot and we don't have rice. But what a mind-blowing moment it is when you walk into the supermarket and there's kosher le Pesach rice.
Absolutely. Very, very different. And, a very different experience. And of course, that's one of the privileges and one of the limitations of living in South Africa is life is a little bit more simple because our rules seem to almost apply to everybody. But of course, that same convenience is also somewhat limiting because we don't realize some of the options that are out there. Rolene, one of the things that I'm always confronted with, and I speak to schools on a regular basis, and one of the programs that I'm involved with is we speak to senior high school students, and generally in the Jewish day schools, where they're going to be leaving the schools and going out to a wider world. And you spoke about the students. Some of the environments are incredibly hostile, incredibly difficult, and we expect them to be able to defend Israel. One of the observations that I've made, and I'm going to reveal something about myself, is I find the way in which we study the history of Israel at school incredibly, incredibly boring. I can't tell you when the first conference happened in here, and then the second conference happened there, and then this guy left there, and then he went there, and then I found it obviously, history is absolutely relevant, so it's nice that it's in a book somewhere, and it's nice that we know it, but it actually isn't relevant, I find, to what our students and what we are dealing with on a daily basis. What is more relevant is understanding the state of Israel as it is. So when somebody says to me, just give back the West Bank, I can say, and there'll be peace, I can say to them, A, was there peace between 1948 and 1967 when Israel didn't control it? If there was, well, then then that's great. There wouldn't have been there. That's then what you're saying is valid. And number two, who must we give it back to? Must we give it back to Jordan? You know, because there was never a Palestinian state. Knowledge like that I find more relevant today than when Herzl or somebody else might have attended a conference. What's your thoughts on that? And feel free to disagree with me vehemently.
Well, I think history is very important because we need to put things in context. And if we don't know our history. How do we know where we're going?
Mm-hmm.
However, I do think we need to be teaching Israel differently. Israel is such a vibrant, robust democracy and such a an energetic culture. And we need to bring some of that energy to the way that we teach about Israel. We need to make Israel fun. Israel is very, very complex. I mean, I often like to say the issues aren't black or white. They're neon green with purple spots and yellow stars, or maybe not yellow stars, but yellow zigzags. It's very, very complex. And as you say, these kids, our kids, leave school and have to go into often very, very hostile environments. Now, here's where I want to challenge parents to become involved in ensuring that your kids have that connection to Israel, have that sense of Zionism, understanding that Zionism comes in its many wonderful flavors and forms, but there's a very, very basic concept at the heart of that, and that is the right for the Jewish people to have a homeland. I'm a firm believer that you can't just leave it to schools to educate the next generation. We all, the community, the parents, everybody, all of us have a duty and responsibility to prepare our kids. It's something you're passionate about. It's something I'm very, very passionate about. And I'm so blessed every year to be able to work with organizations like Stand With Us to help prep them for Israel Apartheid Week. Because a tiny little contribution from me is a small thing towards helping them deal with what they have to deal with. Also, and I know this is not a popular answer for many people, we need to have the uncomfortable discussion.
Mm-hmm.
We need to allow our kids to ask us the uncomfortable questions for several reasons. First of all, if we shut them down, we shut them out and we break that connection. Second of all, if we are expecting them to go onto campuses and go around the world and know who they are and speak up for Israel with pride and with dignity and with a sense of conviction, we need to be able to say, let's talk Dugri. Let's get to the meat and the potatoes, or in this case, the hummus of it all, and let's pull apart these arguments. Israel, like any country, is not perfect. We make our fair share of mistakes, but we need to understand how to deal with them, to look at them in context, and to have those conversations with people from other communities, because that is what breaks the stereotypes. That is what contributes to valuable discourse and discussion. And that is what breaks down those horrible barriers that we see existing today on campus between people. Our detractors don't want to talk.
Mm. Well, that's always something really that we speak about, you and I often talk about that, is it's very difficult to ever change somebody's mind if they are so steadfast in their hatred. Though that isn't really where the battle should be fought. It should be fought amongst people who don't really have a view, or who are neutral with regard to their feelings about Israel. They're the ones that need to be presented with the real, truthful facts.
Absolutely. As we say, haters gonna hate. We're not going to change the minds of the haters. But there are many out there who are open to discussion. There are many who are curious and maybe don't share the curiosity. I mean, here's case in point. A colleague of mine and I just briefed a delegation, a trade union from Germany. And their perceptions about Israel were, completely, alien to what we know. We had a young Muslim woman who said to us, when she walked in Jaffa past the mosque and she heard the Muslim calling people to pray, she was shocked that there was freedom of praying freedom of religion in Israel. She thought it was forbidden.
So in other words, that's the power of propaganda. That's the power of the false narrative that people aren't, if you're not Jewish, you're not allowed to worship in Israel, which couldn't be furthest from the truth. It's one of the only countries, in fact, in the Middle East where there is freedom to practice your religion of your choice.
Exactly. Another example I can give you is a news station that I do some producing work with, who are known to have a very, very biased stance against Israel, and it's a daily battle to try and get our guests and get our narratives across. And I suggested a guest who's known to our show, who's an expert in French Jewry, and because his title is from the IDF, he's an expert in French Jewry, an expert in Aliyah. The immediate assumption from them was, so he's super radical and anti-Muslim. And we're like, no.
Well, yeah. Why would that be an assumption?
Exactly. But this is what we're dealing with. And for me, it was an eye-opener of maybe why we have such a biased global media. It's because the assumption of the best is this is how we must be. And it was a very, very worrying but very, very eye-opening comment.
Do you think that social media has helped the youngsters and helped not even youngsters, people that aren't involved with Israel media on a daily basis? Do you think social media has aided them or made it more difficult to get the truthful narrative across?
I think that's an excellent question, because I think that social media has both helped and hindered. Social media has provided us with a platform where we can get our messages across. We can do it in real time. We can do it very quickly. We can do it in the most attractive way possible. And call up a vote to the RDF, who are outstanding at doing this, especially in a time of crisis. However, with the upside comes the downside. And because people are able to be relatively anonymous, social media has become a place where anti-Semites seem to flourish, because they can hide behind avatars, nobody's checking and nobody's censoring them. The other downside is that people don't seem to, A, read things properly. I mean, I'm continuously surprised at the responses to comments that I put on social media or status updates that I put on, how people don't actually read what I've written properly. And it's become an excuse for people to comment before they think. And, you know, sometimes I want to say, guys, engage brain before your fingers or mouth.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you've got to think things through very, very clearly and try and base your arguments on facts. And not call the person names. And you know from us talking on the Israel report, I'm getting very, very tired of it's the left or it's the right. I don't feel anymore that those are conversations or those are rational arguments. We've got to be able to back up our arguments. Well, he's a lefty or he's a right winger. We've got to be able to
I find it incredible I never understand how anybody's that clear about anything, because I find in some areas I can be defined as a right winger. Some ways I'm so left it's actually ridiculous. How does anybody live this perfect in a perfect environment in the far left or far right? I don't understand it. It means you're not thinking about
and
something.
I have to agree with you there. Because there are some areas where I too am a super liberal and maybe considered a lefty, and some areas where I am more right in my thinking. And when people say to me, are you on the left or are you on the right? I really ask, I'm like, I hate the left wing or the right wing. I like maybe the west wing. I don't know. I'm not into this whole wing and boxes and stuff. I don't like labels. 100%. I think that people are far more complex than that, and I think issues are far more nuanced than to just box them. You're either left or you're right. You're either this or you're that. I think that the world has opened up today to allow us more access to information, and we need to be able to distill it better and come up with better arguments than Sue. It's the left. I mean, an example of that is the debate around gun control.
Absolutely.
I'm personally very proud of young Americans who are taking to the streets and saying, we want tighter gun control. I think it's such an example to us as adults that the youth, who many of us accuse of being apathetic, ambivalent, not involved,
But when they do stand up, then everybody says, oh, well, they're being manipulated by the left, by the parents, and this is child abuse. So you actually
by
can't
Hollywood.
Win. Sorry?
By Hollywood.
Exactly. So it becomes incredibly, incredibly difficult. And the fact is that there's hardly a right, so-called right-wing person that's supporting this, and there's hardly a left person that's saying, hold on, I actually don't believe in gun control, is a problem, because it can't be that every view on the right is something that you adhere to, and if you're left, then every view on the left is something that you adhere to. It's an absurdity. It's childish. It's naive.
It is very childish, and I find it quite entertaining that young adults or the youth are being far more adult about it than many of us are. If somebody said to me, they want to take away our guns. I said, you know, nowhere in this have they said we want to take away your gun. But we would like to go to school without worrying about being shot to death.
Rolene, where do you see the emphasis on education with regard to Israel being in the future? Where do you think it needs to morph to? If you were to be able to design the focus, where would you place it?
Ooh, this is a great question. I think it's so multi-layered. I think, you know, we have to know our history, because without it, who are we?
Right.
I think a lot of it has to be based on how do we find solutions for our very, very complex issues that we face. And it's not just our conflict with our neighbor. There's a lot of internal issues that we have. There's a lot of soul-searching that we need to do as a country. There's a lot of questions about, you know, what kind of leadership do we want in our country. And I know, and this is also where I see the chasm between those of us who live in Israel and the diaspora sometimes, is that for us in Israel, our leaders are not always perfect. We sometimes take issue with the way that they do things. We may agree on some things and we disagree on others. We have very, very complicated relations with them. So on the one hand, we need to look for solutions. And on the other hand, we need to look at not just what we are educating about Israel, it's how we are talking about Israel. Are we talking about Israel and educating the next generation or other countries or other communities in a way that engages them, that brings them in, that allows them the space to raise difficult questions or complicated issues without getting very, very emotional about it? And I know that some listening might think, yes, but, you know, where's the line with criticism, etc.? We have to allow for legitimate criticism.
Absolutely.
But we also have to speak up for those times when that legitimate criticism really crosses a line. I think we also, along with that, need to educate that, or we need to rather maybe empower people that, enough is enough. When you tell us we can't have a country, when you delegitimize us, when you tell us we can't have a national liberation movement and call us Zionists, when you allow for anti-Semitism to flourish in your countries and your communities, you're going to have to deal with me. The buck stops here.
We're going to take some music. We're going to take some ads. When we come back, I want to know from Rolene Marks where she sees herself in a couple of years' time. I'm Howard Feldman. This is Your Afternoon with me. I'm chatting to Rolene Marks. It is Monday. It's the first day of Chol HaMoed Pesach in South Africa. It's the second day of Chol HaMoed Pesach in Israel, which is where Rolene Marks is sitting. Rolene, just before the break, I hinted at the question. I want to know from you, in an ideal world with without any limitations, where is Rolene Marks in 5 years' time, besides Knesset?
That's such a fabulous question.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, I just want to get one message out to people out there. I'm no more or less special than anybody out there. What I do, everybody can do. We can all become advocates and warriors for Israel. And in 5 years' time, gosh, Howard, I mean, I really hope I have an even more fabulous shoe wardrobe than I already have. I'm not announcing any bids for the Knesset. Yes,
are you going to go? You're going to go up against the mayor of Jerusalem? Are you?
I can't do a roundhouse kick as well as you.
Yeah, that's
Howard.
True. I hear that.
In five years' time, I hope to grow my business more.
Right.
A lot of my business is still dealing with the issues that we face, as well as some of the incredible offerings that we have to the world. I hope to speak better Hebrew, that's for sure. Maybe even grammatically correct Hebrew. Maybe even something that resembles Hebrew. But I really hope to be doing more of what I'm doing, but with some kind of a mentorship role in sharing and empowering a next generation of young leaders, young journalists, writers, broadcasters, a next generation of people who feel proud of who they are, proud in the state of Israel, her achievements, her simplicity, her complexity. I hope, Howard, that you and I are still chatting on Chai FM every single day.
Absolutely right. And that means we can follow your story and see where it goes. We want to be the first to know that you have made a bid for the Knesset.
Howard, you know you'll always get exclusive rights for that. But to me, you are... To do the work that I do, first of all, make sure that you get good mentors. Find mentors. Find people you can learn from who will guide you and work with the best. You know my philosophy is that I only work with the best, and I'm grateful to have manifested that into reality. And also, and this is a message to anybody out there who's in a leadership position or a management position, is make sure you share the skills.
Absolutely, that you
impart
right.
the skills onto other people.
Absolutely, absolutely right. And that's unfortunately where we do leave it. I've been chatting to Rolene Marks, getting a little bit of a background as to what makes her tick, where she comes from, what she's engaged with, and where she hopes to be going. Rolene Marks, you can catch her every afternoon, Monday through to Thursday, at between 5:30 and 6 o'clock, and of course on Fridays on the Morning Mayhem.
Absolutely, because what would a week be without a little mayhem? And, if we're talking about my journey, I have to just thank you, Howard, and Chai FM, who are a major part of my journey and the community in South Africa and the organizations that I've been very blessed to be affiliated with, Designers Federation, the Media Team Israel, of course, WIPSO, South Africa, and various others, because without you, the community, the listeners, without you, Howard, and my favorite teams in the afternoon and on a Friday morning, and without the organization, giving me the opportunity to learn and to do leadership training, I would not be able to have this conversation with you today.
Rolene Marks chatting to me from Jerusalem. I'm Howard Feldman. This has been your afternoon with me.